Why are more women than ever choosing Natural Cycles? The hormone-free, side-effect-free way to take control of your fertility. Natural Cycles is a birth control app that uses your temperature to find your fertile window. It is more than a basic cycle tracking app. Natural Cycles is the only FDA-cleared and CE-marked birth control app and has helped millions prevent and plan for pregnancy naturally. Save 15% when you sign up today with code RADIO15. Learn more at naturalcycles.com.
What kind of programs does this school have? How are the test scores? How many kids do a classroom? Homes.com knows these are all things you ask when you're home shopping as a parent. That's why each listing on Homes.com includes extensive reports on local schools, including photos, parent reviews, test scores, student-teacher ratio, school rankings, and more. The information is from multiple trusted sources and curated by Homes.com's dedicated in-house research team. It's all so you can make the right decision for your family. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
Big moments or small moments, they all deserve great style.
Our over 800 stylists are here to help you look and feel your best. Visit your local Maurice's to find fashion fit for you with a little help from us.
You are listening to Metal Shop's Backstage Pass.
Hey, it's Metal Shop here on The Rock right now. Alvino. Oh my God, I'm messing it up already. Alvino.
No, you're good, man.
Salcedo.
Salcedo.
Okay, cool.
Yeah,
From a band called of Feather and Bone, Colorado-based band. Saw them a couple years back at the Northwest Terror Fest downstairs at the Barboza. They totally tore it apart, man. Played a bunch of tracks from their record, Bestial Hymns of Perversion. First off, how you doing, man? How's it going? How are you staying sane? How are you staying safe? How are you not
doing,
going
man,
crazy?
No, actually, you know what? Not too much has changed for me, honestly. I work at a little like market, so we're open every day. We kind of don't allow people in the store, kind of doing like old school pantry style from like the 1800s.
Yeah.
But no, every day I'm still working every day. Some routine things got kind of thrown off, but I guess, you know, that's just how it has to be for now. And but overall, we found kind of a good safe way to still be a band and practice with one another. So we're actually currently finishing up the new record. So the follow-up to Bestial Hymns is currently wrapping up as we speak, and just kind of finishing touches on some songs, kind of finishing over some rearrangements of the songs and like kind of like riffs. Our guitar player D, he just kind of, you know, he's such a perfectionist, and like not in the worst, in a bad way at all, but more so just in a really positive manner that he could always like go back and listen to something that he wrote, and is like, I can do that better. I can do that better. And what makes it a little more interesting too, we've always written very organically as a band, which means like Dave doesn't really, he doesn't really go home and like write a whole song and go, cool, here's this entire, you know, 6 minute song.
Yeah.
This is what's going to happen here. This is where the drums are going to be. Vocals. He's more like, you know, I have a couple ideas for riffs, and let's just go. And him and our drummer, Preston, just kind of just feed off of one another really well that way. Like, they'll just be like, how do you want to start? It's like, let's start with a blast. Okay, go. And then, you know, before we know it, 3 hours later and some screaming matches and, you know, people losing their minds a little bit, we have a song done. And after that song, after the song has been written, we can kind of go back after, listen to it, reassess it, meet up again as a band and rewrite and kind of like, like I said, put finishing touches, and that's kind of where we're at right now, is finishing touches on the last few songs. Vocals will start coming in next, trying to fit vocals in, see where we want them, how they want to sound, and then actually we're going to do something a little different this time around. We're going to have a lot more samples just due to Preston, our drummer.
Cool.
He runs a record label called Trust Collective with another local guy named Brandon, who's in a band called Vermin Womb from out here as well.
Yep.
Yeah, they're amazing. And so those two run a noise ambient label called the Trust Collective. And they've been putting out releases and pumping out tons of releases. But Preston has about 3 different ambient noise projects that he does himself.
Yeah.
And so he's going to be doing all the samples coming up for the new record. So, yeah, after that, we enter the studio on July 5th. We'll be, well, due to COVID and everything like that, it kind of got thrown off. We were going to go record the record in Philadelphia with Arthur Rizik, and again with traveling. So we're really excited to have that happen. But in turn, we have a good friend Ben, who actually, very funny, I'm actually walking around talking on the phone because I'm like, I get super anxious sitting down, but I'm actually walking right by his studio right now, which happens to be across the street from my house.
Oh, cool.
So we're going to actually go. Yeah, so we're going to track there with our friend Ben from Juggernaut Studios, and then Arthur will take the mixes and the masters and finish it up for us. And yeah, hopefully tie up all the loose ends, and we'll see a new record soon.
Cool, man. Well, was that the plan, like, going into this COVID situation? Was that the original plan, or did you guys, like, redirect and decide, like, hey, let's just focus on this? Or how deep into the process of doing a record were you guys when all this started to hit, like, in the beginning of March?
So we had all the songs done, at least, like I said, at least the skeletons, at least the structures of things done. We were getting geared up to do it. We knew we were going to have a couple hiccups with some, like, live shows coming up.
Yeah.
And then when COVID hit, we were like, oh, are these shows going to happen? I mean, some had already, like, kind of been like, hey, we're postponing for now because we don't know what's going to happen. Yeah. Like, okay. And, like, but at this point, you know, back in early March, we knew, you know, like, okay, maybe the summer plans will still happen. You know, obviously no one knew at that time what was going to happen for the upcoming summer for when it came to gatherings and whatnot. So as those started to kind of fall off, and then we had a European tour planned with our friends at Mortif from up north where you're at.
Yeah, shout out Tony Wolf.
We're going to go there. Yeah, the best dudes ever. And a killer record. This was obviously one of the best records in recent times.
Yeah.
But and label mates, so that also was a really cool thing. We were really excited. We're going to go out there with some old homies and label mates and just kind of tear apart Europe for a little bit till they got to Kill Town, and we were just going to hang out there, take a little vacation, and because we played last year, and we were just going to go because we love Copenhagen now. Like, even being there just for Kill Town was such a really cool experience that, like, now we're like, let's just go back, we'll just hang out, we'll watch our friends play, and we'll eat food and chill in a cool city. But as you know now, that's probably not going to be happening. So I think when that hit, we were just like, well, I guess there's nothing left to do but just finish this record. And we kind of hit a couple of snags where we were like, is this worth putting out a record right now? Like, we can't follow up with it. We don't know when we're going to be able to tour and support it. But it kind of came at the end there that we were like, well, if we can postpone or we take forever with a new record, will it, you know, how long is this going to take us to come out later? So adjusting with it, changing our practice situation a little bit more. We were kind of like, you know what, let's do it. And like, it just kind of hit where it was like, we hit our stride. We hit our stride with the songs, and we're like, let's just go. We're going to record this. We're done. And we'll get this record out regardless if we can tour or whatever. But I think people have just been kind of chipping at the bits a little bit to have a new record. So it's like, yeah, let's follow through. Let's get some new music out there to people.
Nice, dude. Well, I'm definitely stoked to hear it. I wanted to go back a little bit and ask because we've kind of seen an evolution of Feather and Bone. So when I first heard you guys, it was more of the like chaotic, dark, hardcore kind of coming from that scene, and you guys have gone straight like full like caveman death metal almost. What kind of led that kind of evolution, and when did you guys decide to kind of tweak the sound and change it up a little bit?
So a long time ago, we put out the first LP called Embrace the Wretched Flesh. We had written it, recorded it. At the time, had a label who was like, cool, I want the record. We're going to put it out. We're like, cool, we're going to finish, you know, writing it, recording it. Like, great, just send it over. We'll get this record out.
Yeah.
So, you know, we took the months to finish writing and then recorded it and basically got put on hold for damn near 8 months with no word.
Wow.
And we were young, we were still a young band, and like this, you know, not mentioning names, but the label was like a cool label. Like, yeah, we'll wait this out. Like, why wouldn't we wait for this opportunity? We can be patient, no big deal. Cause I mean, it's our first LP. So we wait. And in that 8 to like almost 10 months, we had already started writing, and we had already been sitting on these songs for sheesh. By that 10 months, we had already been sitting on these songs for over a year because we had written them.
Oh, damn.
And we had been rehearsing them, practicing them. So these songs to us were incredibly old. Like, I know, like, it's from the outside looking in, it's like, oh, they just put out a new record. For us, it's like, dude, we've been playing these songs for well over a year and haven't really written anything. And by that point, you know, everyone evolves. Every band evolves and people evolve. And we were already starting to write again. And that's when the point we started writing Pious Abnormality, the demo from 2018.
Yeah.
We were working on, kind of already working on the fringes of that. And, you know, so Embrace the Wretched Flesh finally came out, and we were like, well, I guess we should do an honor to this record and we should tour on it. So we did. We spent the summer and a fall being on the road, take the winters off mainly because I was, you know, being from Colorado, trying to drive out of here in the snow is awful. And, and on top of our jobs, need us around for the holidays, so we need to be home.
Mm-hmm.
At this point, you know, we're already working on Pious Abnormality, and, you know, we kind of look at each other, it was like, do we just, quote unquote, break up the band and start a new name? Do we keep the name? Is a name really that important? You know, and in hindsight, I think all three of us could agree we maybe should have changed the name of the band and let the history be history. You know, let a feather and bone fall into obscurity. But, you know, we follow through and we own the decision that we made that, you know, we kept the band name. And, you know, and the way I feel about it personally, I can't speak on behalf of the other two. But, you know, for me, it's like, it's just a name. Like, if you're going to judge a band solely based off of the name and not listen to the content of it, it's like, do you really actually like music? You know, like I hear bands and like, like anybody else, I hear a name and go, eh, that doesn't really strike my personal interest, but you know, I put it on and I go, whoa, this band's awesome.
Yeah.
You know, and it's like, I'm glad I really gave it a chance. I think that's just the music lover in any person. It's like, they're just going to listen to it regardless of, you know, full blown aesthetic or just name or whatever, you know, it's like, if I see this band is on a label that I like, they are associated with bands that I like, it's like, okay, I'm going to check this out. So that's kind of when we just owned it. And, you know, when it came time for vocals, the older vocal style I was doing was actually very forced for me. Actually, like, messed up my voice a lot. It hurt every night after a set. I'd just be like super sore throat. I got to drink a lot of water. And then when I dropped my voice down, it was just, there it is. That's how my voice should be. And that's how it should sound. And so, yeah, I think after Pious Abnormality, we're like, this is it. This is what we're going to do. And we're going to own it, regardless if people call us posers or people say we jump bandwagons or whatever. But, you know, like, I've always told anybody who's ever asked this about our band that we've been doing blast beats since we started. We would play shows to punk kids, hardcore kids, grindcore kids, metalheads. It didn't matter who we were playing to. Mm-hmm. You know, people who knew what a blast beat was go, whoa, this band can blast. And why are they blasting, like, at a at a punk show or at a, you know, a D-beat show or a hardcore show or whatever we were playing, you know? Like, this is what we've always done. So we kind of changed the vocals up a little bit and threw in a little bit more riffage. But other than that, like, we're kind of still the same band we always were. We pull from black metal. We pull from crust. We pull from punk. We pull from death metal. You know, it's like, it's just kind of how it is. And evolving now, even after Bestial Hymns, we kind of like fell into a groove of like, cool, we really like enjoy playing old school style death metal.
Yeah.
Which is always like, you know, something that we love, but also adding in that weird atmospheric feel of like bands from like Australia, like bands like Temple Night's Eye, Grave Upheaval, Portal, Impetuous Ritual, things like that. Like trying to keep it very obscure, the making some parts very just chaotic where the person can't catch on, where it's just unrelenting the entire song, where you kind of just go, wow, I need a break from this song, or where is it going to break? Where is it going to stop? Where is it going to slow down for me? And it's like, we're not going to give that like gratuitously. And I think that's what the new record has, a little bit more dynamic than Bestial Hymns. Like, I think we all wanted that, just a little bit more slower parts, a little parts that hit a little heavier. And, but still, it's still us. It's still our band. And I think it's a nice evolution and step up away from Bestial Hymns that will not leave people going like, whoa, this band just did another 180 on us, you know, or this band went off the rails. It's like, no, we're still, I think people will be hopefully pretty pleased with the follow up to the record. So, yeah.
Dude, there's like a total renaissance in just death metal right now. And I mean, you know, labels like Maggot Stomp and there's just so many cool underground labels that are doing just strictly death metal, and so many bands that, you know, there's the like, brutal death metal bands, of course. And then there's the more like, knuckle dragging death metal, you know, sweatpants death metal. And it's cool. Like, what are your thoughts on, like, kind of like the renaissance in death metal? It must be pretty cool to be a part of something like that right now.
Yeah, it's, and one, it's amazing just watch all of our friends' bands be noticed, to see bands that we've known that have been working super hard, like, for a long time now. Like, coming up with us, or just knowing that some of these people have put a lot of time into these bands. And, like, even being from Denver, where it just kind of, like, it just sparked one day where Primitive Man is on Relapse. And then we see Blood Incantation, like, arrive, and Spectral Voice comes to fruition finally.
Yeah,
there's us. And like, in like outside of death metal or like doom or anything like that, I mean, we had like Chemist, who was starting to blow up.
Primitive Man.
You know, and yeah, like it's like this whole thing where all of a sudden in Denver, like all these bands are getting like noticed outside of Denver, and Denver starts becoming a really strong scene.
That's so cool.
And we're seeing some smaller bands pop up, but to like see just the death metal in general, like I said, it's been super cool. It's, I personally love it. I love watching and like seeing new bands like come up. Like I'm trying to think of like a prime example, like that band Ossuary, who happens to be like, I think re-released on Maggot Stomp. Not sure if they're on the label, but they're from Madison, Wisconsin. And like, I put that on, I was like, this is just ignorance. It's like gross. It's filthy. It's disgusting. And it's like, this, it's like, yeah, this is sick. And you know, when it came, like there's a band Profane Order from Montreal who blew me away when I heard that. So I'm a little more war metal, but I was just like, this is cool. Cause like, I think there's a little bit of something for anybody who may be venturing into it. And especially for like young kids, like, you know, who are going to be the next crop, who are going to start bands, who are going to write things, who are going to start, you know, putting out records when the older bands start to fall off, you know, like it's just going to be the natural progression. I think for the first time since like, sheesh, since the 90s, like you're seeing a plethora of things. And I don't know if that's just from accessibility with like online presence of bands now and Bandcamp and SoundCloud and Spotify's and whatever. It's just like, I think the fact that there's so much availability now that like anybody can go, well, I'm into war metal this week, and next week I'm into old school death metal, and then I'm into porno grind this week, and then next week I'm into doom metal. You know, it's like there's so much out there now that I think it's been just in death metal now. Like there's something for everybody. If you want a little bit more, you know, death doom, you got it. You want something a little more blackened and grindy, and you can have it. You know, it's like there's all these different bands, and it's super cool to watch. So yeah, no, I'm pumped on it. I think it's been great. And just shout out to all the bands out there who are, you know, still working hard and just touring. Like for me personally, I think a big part of that is get your ass on the road. Like we have been touring relentlessly for the past 8 years as a band, and I have nothing but respect for bands that just put all the chips on the table and go for broke. Go, we're going to go out and we're going to play some really awful shows and we're going to play some good shows. And then next time we come through, maybe we'll play a little bit of the better shows. Mm-hmm. You know, like the first time, a couple times we played Seattle, they were bust. Like, no offense to the promoters or anything else. We were a small band. Like, no one came out for us. No one knew who we were. We were just trying to make ways for ourselves to get out there. And then you said you saw us at Northwest Terror Fest, and that was just amazing. Awesome. That was like just a great show, like one of my favorite shows to play live. And I like, we weren't expecting that response either. We didn't expect people to really care about us. I was like, no one's going to stay down here. Everyone's going to go upstairs for the next band and whatever. I think Necrot was after us. They played upstairs at Numo's. And I was like, everyone's going to leave. And I was like, well, there's a lot of people here. I'm like,
that was packed.
The crowd maintained the whole set.
Yep.
Yeah. So it was super cool to just like I said, like if you work hard, not saying we're the biggest band in the world, we're not the next Morbid Angel or, you know, whatever, but it's like, I think it's like to see how we went playing our first shows on tours in tiny basements to whole bars or, you know, people's backyards, you know, to go play Barboza on a downstairs stage and hold our own and show people like, hey, we're not to be reckoned with. Mm-hmm. We're not to be, you know, anything like that. We are a band that can hold our own, and we will show you live that we can do that. So yeah, that's what I say for bands that just keep touring, just do it. Like get out there. Like I understand hype is easy. Getting hype and selling a ton of merch online is pretty quick and easy for a lot of people nowadays. But for me to really like pay attention to a band, me personally, when I see them like dedicated to being on the road, I'm like, hell yeah, this band has it. The band is like serious about doing this. So yeah.
Nice, dude. Well, okay, so I don't want to get off the subject of death metal just yet, and I'm going to put you on the spot, man. Okay, so we all know the big four of American thrash metal, right? So it's what they call Anthrax, Slayer, Megadeth, Metallica, right? So if they sat you down and said, all right, dude, you got to create the big four of death metal, what would your big four be?
Cool. For the basic answers, I'll definitely put, for me personally, Morbid Angel and Death, just because, I mean, I think anybody would do that and anybody would want to do that. But, man, beyond that, that is such a, that's an open bag. That's a mixed bag of nuts right there,
right?
For sure. I mean, for classic bands, like it's like, you know, like I say, like the thrash world, like you said, like Slayer and Metallica, it's like, man, definitely Morbid Angel, definitely Death. I'm going to go ahead and throw Blasphemy in there just because they were doing it so long ago.
Yeah.
they were doing their own style so long ago.
Yeah.
And I think they're the perfect example of the saying. It's like, was it easily replicated, never duplicated, or whatever,
mm-hmm.
like whatever that, or imitated, whatever the saying is.
Yeah.
But I think Blasphemy deserves to be on there for blending black metal with a death aesthetic and death metal lyrics and just war. Like, so they took an approach that I think other bands were like, whoa. I mean, yeah, you had like Sarcophago and other bands like that doing stuff similar, but I think Blasphemy really honed in
pretty much credited a genre,
everyone
yeah.
after that. Yeah, they completely made the whole red font on black background or white background with a goat and a sword dismembering, you know, angels. Like,
yep.
it's pretty much, they did that. They did that. Any band that wants to follow after that, you pay homage immediately to Blasphemy for what they've done.
Totally.
So I would put Blasphemy, for me personally, Blasphemy up there just because they're also one of my favorite bands. So.
All right. What's number four?
And then, oh, man. You know what? It's probably not my first choice, or probably not even my fourth choice, but I'm going to put him in there just because I think this band opened up the gateways for Maggot Stomp. They opened up for this new wave of like bands that are like, they don't need to be on a major label. They don't need to be on a huge label. They just need to be putting out demos, and they're getting big. They're getting huge. Like, you know, there's countless of bands doing that right now. And I think this band opened up a floodgate for that style to go, you don't need to be overly technical. You don't need to have tons of riffs.
Yeah.
Frankly, you can just ride a power chord riff style for an entire song, and you're going to put out a full record and tour and be considered one of the most classic death metal bands, and that's Obituary.
Oh,
you know,
yeah.
Like,
yeah.
You know, for me personally, I mean, I love Obituary. I would probably not put them in the top four, but for influential reasons and seeing where death metal is going nowadays, you know, like,
totally.
You know, you have bands that, like, will honor, like, Gorguts and Demolich. Things like that, the Finnish style. But then, like, I think for what's happening in American death metal right now that people are seeing around the world and hearing about more and more, and just kind of, like you said, knuckle-dragging.
Yep.
Just not the thinking man's death metal, just the barbarian death metal.
Yep.
I think Obituary was, like, made it okay to be that way. So, yeah, I'd put Obituary in there.
Nice, dude. Okay, well, let's continue to get nerdy with it, man, and let's think back to and even if it's embarrassing, and even more if it's embarrassing, I want to know before, you know, and I'm talking about like a cool older brother giving you a CD or a tape. What was the first album that you purchased on your own with your own like chore money, CD, tape, whatever? First piece of music you purchased with your own money.
Master of Puppets by Metallica.
Yeah.
It was the first one I actually had, like, I actually had some own money, and I remember being
nice
in junior high. I was an eighth grader, and I think like some kid like had a shirt on. I was like, I don't know what that is. And then I would always hang out at the same record store that was like up the street from my house in the suburbs, like a little bit north of Denver.
Yeah.
And eventually I got a job there, and that pretty much opened up the floodgates because I worked with, like, you know, a bunch of older dudes who had been listening to music, you know, through the 60s and 70s, they were like, one dude was super heavy into metal, one guy was into classic rock, some guys like jazz.
Yep.
There's a punk kid that worked there. Basically, at the age of 15, I just had a buffet of music thrown my way.
That's great.
Where it was everything. They're like, here, listen to Bad Brains and listen to Black Flag. But then this other guy I worked with, Bob, who we're still friends with to this day, he's known me since I was 15, and I'm about to be 36 in 3 days.
Yeah.
And
nice.
We still talk to each other, but he gave me my first Dark Throne record. He was the first
awesome.
One showing me Norwegian, like, you know, black metal. Like, kind of showing me all that stuff. And being, you know, imagine being 15 going, whoa, these dudes hate God and they have their faces painted. Like, what the hell's happening? You know, and then like Slayer being shown that. And I was like, whoa, these guys have like upside down crosses. Like, what the fuck is this? And,
yeah.
You know, so, but the first money I had was Metallica, and I think any kid could admit the first time they heard like even one off of Anjustice, you know, you hear that song, go, whoa, this is the heaviest thing I've ever heard in my life.
And totally,
you know, you listen back to it, and it's always a classic beat. You know, part of me listens back and go, God, Lars Ulrich sucks. but beyond that was my first record I bought with my own money, and I think I remember I had to be 13 or something like that. They tail into being 13, but where I used to get my haircut as a kid was in that same plaza, and my dad would go the same time as me. So he would drive me. I'd get my haircut first, then he'd sit down to get his. And I like would save my money up from my, you know, odd and end chores like that being a kid. And I would walk over to the music store and hang out while my dad was getting his haircut. And that's when I would start buying things and slowly started building up like a quote unquote CD collection. And finally, one summer, those dudes were like, "Hey, like, you're here every day. Like, do you just want a job?" And I was like, "Yeah, that's my mom." And then from then on, I think I worked there for 7 years.
What was the record store?
And, you know, obviously just, it was called Angelo's. I think they still have a couple of locations around Denver. I know that one, that particular location I worked at is like a pho restaurant now. Okay. But, you know, it's the hot Asian soup on top of my memories, but it's cool. And but yeah, so that's where I had my first job. I kind of just like I said, just my whole world had opened up. I was kind of like a sheltered child. I was the only child. My mom was a little like religious and a little overprotective. And my dad just worked a ton, you know, so it was just kind of like I had no siblings, no really older cousins that listened to anything but hip hop. And everyone I went to school with had to listen to hip hop. And I was like, to fit in, I had to listen to hip hop. And I think, you know, when I first started hearing something else, you know, like distorted guitars, I was like, whoa, I think I click with this a little bit better than hip hop. Like, to this day, I will always love most rap and hip hop from that era. Yeah. Like, if you ask anybody, that's what I listen to mostly. But, yeah, I think when I finally heard like metal for the first time and punk, I was like, this is it. This is what I love. And this is what I'm going to do. And this is what I'm going to pay attention to. And even going through high school and college, it was just kind of like, yeah, the minute I think I was in college, I had like living with like some friends in a house, I was like, let's start a band. Let's just be in a band. I suck at guitar, but let's just try this. And, you know, through trial and error and bands here and there and, you know, friendships falling apart through all that, you know, it kind of just, something clicks at one point. You find some people that you go, wow, we work really well together and we like each other and let's see where this goes. And that's kind of like, you know, what led me to A Feather and Bone. So, yeah.
Awesome. Well, the thing is like, I love that you worked at a record store, because I worked at a record store for years, and I will definitely pay a lot of respect to my coworkers at that place, and not just like metal, hardcore punk, but they also exposed me to a lot of really cool jazz music and soul music, stuff that I never would have like ventured out and listened to myself. But just being in that situation where you get so many, a diverse amount of sounds, and it's just like, it's the coolest thing for a music nerd to work at a record store. It might not make you rich or anything, but you certainly get rich as far as just like your musical knowledge, and you just like, you just soak it all in, man. And I pay a lot of definitely respect to the fact that that's where my base of my music knowledge started, was working at that record store.
Yeah, seriously. You just become more appreciative.
Yep.
And like, some people are like, oh, I can't listen to country. And I'm like, oh no, man, this is really good country out there.
Yeah.
I think as you get older, you kind of start going like, I'm going to listen to where the fuck I want to listen to.
Totally.
Like, I'm unapologetic about what I like, because it's like, who do I have anything to prove to anymore? I'm getting older now, and I'm like, whatever. I'm just going to listen to what I want to listen to, you know, and be controversial about it, I guess. Some days I want to listen to country. Why the hell not? You know, or some days I just want to listen to freeform jazz. And
totally.
And maybe every day when I wake up, I'm not listening to, you know, Revenge. You know, I'm not waking up in the morning and brushing my teeth to it. But, you know, there's a time and place for everything. And I think being well-rounded in music also allows you to write better. It allows you to pull from different experiences, different aspects, different viewpoints, not just one viewpoint, you know. And I think anybody would be doing a disservice to themselves as a musician or artist or whatever to not be able to be well-rounded in your field and know everything that's around it, you know, because some things could just kind of blend in really nicely. So
I don't know what you're talking about, bro. I listen to Conqueror right as soon as I wake up.
That's all I listen to.
Yeah, right.
Conqueror more for I eat Conqueror for breakfast. That's all I'm doing. So
I remember her just being so perplexed. I knew this guy, and I went, you know, back when it was just only iPods. I still use my iPod, but back when it was just iPods, not streaming. So you would scroll through someone's, you know, music collection, and I remember I scrolled through his music collection, and it was just all hardcore, and I was like, wait, so do you ever get in different moods? Like, and he's just like, nah, man, I just listen to hardcore. And I was just like, it kind of was just like, I mean, I love hardcore, yes, but at the same time, it's like, what's...
I need more. There's more out there. There's so much more out there. There's so much cool music out there that, you know, I think you should just listen to. Like, I mean, even when I was,
where's your Led Zeppelin, dude? Like, come on, man. Where's your Pink Floyd on there? Come on.
I said, that's exactly what I was just going to say. When I was a kid, I would not be caught dead listening to Pink Floyd. I was like, that is some hippie nerd, and I'll never listen to it.
Yeah.
And here I am now. I have the entire collection on vinyl.
Nice.
And I listen to them at least once a week now.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, 16-year-old me is shaking his head at myself now, going like, man, you sold out.
You're getting old and crusty.
They wrote some jams, though.
Totally.
Harder jams than most bands did. So, yeah, exactly. I think you just kind of, you grow up. And I think I get a really good perspective of that now because I work with one of my coworkers. He's 20 years old, about to be 21.
Yeah.
And he's super into hardcore. That's his whole life right now.
Okay.
And, you know, I'm like, have you ever listened to, like, bands that can kind of blend genres? And he goes, no. And I'm like, Jesus, man, have you ever heard of, like, I think one day we put on Sam Cooke. He goes, what's this? I go, you never heard of Sam Cooke?
Yeah.
Like, this is soul. This is, like, the soul man. Like,
yeah.
So come on. So it's like, yeah, you kind of, like, look back and go, and I think some
it's
people like, get frustrated.
It's not Knock Loose, bro. I don't know
kids,
it.
Like, exactly. And I think
where's the mosh part?
I look back on him and I just kind of go, you know what? I was the same way.
Yep.
I was stubborn, hot-headed, didn't want to listen to anything else that anybody told me to listen to or would suggest to me, and like, you know, just cross my arms and shake my head and go, nope, not listening to this. This is not my thing. You know, and I kind of see it in him and I kind of like have a little more understanding. Some people go, why is he so like stubborn? I'm like, he's a 20-year-old kid. Like, he is growing and learning and evolving, and hell, like, 20-year-old me couldn't be anywhere further from where I'm at right now. You know, not as a person overall, but, like, you know, I'm still who I am, but,
yeah,
you know, I have some different belief systems than I did back then, and, you know, like, just a lot of different things. I was sober back then, and definitely not now anymore, so I think it's just, like, you kind of evolve and change.
That's why you like Pink Floyd.
let's say the first time I smoked a joint, I was like, yeah, Pink Floyd makes sense now.
Kind of
started playing in the background. I was like, whoa, there it is.
You know what's funny is I have a friend, and actually shout out to my friend Tim Trust. He sings for a band called Earth Control, Owen Hart, formerly known as Owen Hart.
Yeah.
You know Tim Trust. So, yeah, he's also in the Helm, Das Helm. He was talking about one time, so he was straight edge forever, and finally he you know, quote-unquote broke edge, man. He sold out. And he's smoking weed, right? And he said how stoked he was to so all these albums that he loved, he was stoked to go back and listen to them on weed. So he's like, you know, like, now I can finally listen to Dope Smoker, you know, on weed. I can finally listen to Dope Throne on weed. You know, it's a different process.
Dude,
you know?
I went and listened to Sabbath right off the bat. I think the second day after I started smoking weed, I was like, I'm going to go put on Sabbath. And I was like, yep, I get it. This is the most amazing band in the world.
Yep. Absolutely.
So, I mean, you always appreciate it when you're a kid, like, listening to it, but I think when it hit me, I was like, yep, these dudes knew what the fuck they were doing.
Dude,
so,
I was the same way, though, when I was...
I agree with Tim.
When I was a kid, though, like, you know, growing up, if someone would have put on Blue Oyster Cult, I would have been like, where's the mosh part, bro? Like, where's the breakdown?
Dude, this isn't Satisfaction. I don't want to listen to it.
I know, man. Oh, anyways, so we're getting into a rabbit hole with that, and so I'm talking with Alvino from A Feather and Bone, a killer band from Colorado. Now, just a couple more questions for you. Get on the subject of music and albums that have made an impact on your life. Why don't you pick four albums that have made like a positive impact on your life throughout your life?
Oh, just in general, not just in metal.
Nope, all together, man. All albums growing up that have made a positive impact on your life.
Damn. Let's see here. Number one, Neurosis, Times of Grace.
Nice.
That album taught me it was okay to be vulnerable. That it taught me it was okay to think things could be beautiful and not everything had to be just completely deathy and, you know, just dark and everything. Was like, you can still be dark, you could still be sad, but there's a delicacy to it sometimes. Like, sometimes there's a little bit more depth to it. And when I heard Times of Grace, I remember just liking the album cover. Like, I think there was posters hanging in the record store, and I was like, I really like that wolf thing. That thing looks sick. And so one of the dudes I worked with, you never heard Neurosis? I go, no. He goes, here, you should, like, that's Times of Grace. It's coming out. And I was like, cool, I'm going to check it out. And you know, after that, I was like, this band is like phenomenal. I've seen them so many times, have seen them just like every time I have to go see them, I was like, I have to see this band. So yeah, I would put Times of Grace up there just because it like, it opened me up a little bit more to other things. And I think at that time I didn't know, even really know what doom or quote unquote stoner doom or whatever it falls into. I just think at that time I had no idea what that was. And I was like, this is something completely new to me. And it has always stuck with me. I think I went on a huge Neurosis kick. Like I want to say last month, I think it was like the first or second week of being quarantined, I just like started listening to all of them. And I think I did like an Instagram post or something like that. I was like, you know, what's your favorite song and album? And I was just like, it was cool. Maybe just kind of reconnect with that band a little bit more.
Yeah.
And actually it's funny. I found a hoodie too, which kind of sparked it. I have a Times of Grace hoodie I got from Zion's Gate in Seattle.
Yeah. When we were
on tour.
Like, shout out.
Yeah. It was hanging up on the ceiling. And I was like, what size is that? He goes, extra large. He's like, I'll buy it now. And he goes, I'm like, how much is it? 70. I was like, I don't care. I'll take it right now.
Yep.
So, so yeah, that was like, I think that Times of Grace just holds a special place. A second album. It's actually, you know, it's weird. It's Rockin' Rio. I think it was, came out, what, 2002 from Iron Maiden.
Yeah.
And unlike most people, like, I didn't grow up with Maiden. I didn't grow up with Priest. I grew up, like, I found Metallica on my own, and that's when, like, Megadeth opened up. And heard of Anthrax and Slayer. So the big four opened up for me, and then other bands kind of associated. But I was never into, like, a little bit older stuff that came out, like, early 80s to, like, late, you know, mid and late 70s, like Priest. But I remember I was, again, it always ties back to the record store, but it had came out when I was a senior in high school.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember we put it on over the speakers and I was like, this is so sick. Like all these people are like singing these songs. It sounds huge, like recorded, like that soundboard recording is phenomenal still to this day.
Oh yeah.
And it came out as a DVD CD set and I took it home and I put on the DVD on like my PlayStation or whatever in my room. And I watched the whole set and I was like, I fucking love my Iron Maiden. Like, this band is amazing. It's corny. Like, I started watching, like, old videos of them.
And so
I was
good.
Like, man, these guys are wearing, like, spandex, and he has bangs. I was like, God, these guys are nerds, and they sing about nerdy shit. But something about it is just so cool.
Yeah, absolutely.
And I was like, yeah. But I never would have delved into that band as deep as I did at that age if it wasn't for Rockin' Rio. And it's actually because of Fear of the Dark. They start it, and then the whole crowd just starts like, they do the woes.
Yep.
They do the woes with it. And I think, you know, you're an 18-year-old kid. You hear that and go, holy, that's so sick. Like, this is perfect. So, yeah, I would definitely put that in there as a top four for sure.
Okay.
Next, I'll go into death metal for this.
Yeah.
Because this band kind of just like, it made it, at least being in A Feather and Bone, it made me go, fuck the formula, fuck anything else. Let's just blast it and let's just be unrelenting. And this band kind of helped me, not really guide us. They're not really like, we don't really try to like sound like them or anything like that. But I think all of us heard this band around the same time. Maybe Dave heard it a little bit before us. And when we all started listening to them and then finally seeing them live, when we got to play with them, we played with them in Mexico City. We saw Dead Congregation.
Nice.
And Promulgation of the Fall. You know, it just, there's no intro, there's no synth, there's no creepy noises, no feedback. It's just pop, pop, done. And it just blasts and blasts.
Yep.
And just keeps blasting. But it's like the whole album, they keep it interesting. They don't let up. They don't, there's just no sympathy. There's no care. There's no apology.
For no foreplay.
Who they are and writing. Yeah, exactly. It's just like they're sticking it in, going for it. They're not even gentlemen about it. And so when we got to see them live finally in Mexico City, I had heard like they had a hellacious trip. Like these dudes had played Quebec Death Fest, I think, or something like that.
Yeah.
And then had to fly immediately after the show, like at night, red eye, into Mexico. Flight gets delayed or something like that happens to them. And they show up as the fest is starting. And of course, they're headlining, so they have most of the day to go relax and rest.
Yeah.
But like even then, like the jet lag, you know, they're from Greece, so I can only imagine the culture shocks of, you know, going from Canada to Mexico immediately right off the bat from one another. These dudes, like, put on an incredible show. Flawless.
That's awesome.
They went up there, and they just blew me away. They blew everybody away. And I think a lot of people I know hadn't really seen them yet. And I remember, I think it was like last year they did those shows in like on the East Coast for a little bit, like New York and like Boston or something like that. They played in a couple shows and people were posting going, this is the most amazing band I've ever seen live. It's like, exactly. Like when you see them, you just understand. I think people listen to them and go, oh, this is cool. This band's really sick. Maybe they're cool because they got a lot of hype or everyone knows they're a cool band or whatever. But not until you see them live that you go, holy, like this is how it's done. Like this is proficient. It's savage. It's not overly technical, but yet still can be.
Yeah.
And their drummer is just a machine. So, yeah, they were Promulgation of the Fall. That just made me, like, at least as a band, all of us kind of go, be unapologetic, write what you want to write. If it's blasty, because, I mean, Beast Show Hymns got a lot of, criticism for being overly blasty and not enough slow parts or whatever. But it's like, even then, it's like, we didn't care. We wanted it that way.
Yeah.
And I think for me personally, Dead Congregation kind of like was like, you know, behind us going like, go for it. Who cares what they think? And I'll be like, you're right. They're on my shoulder telling me we got to do this. Let's just blast the whole way through this album.
Yeah.
So I definitely give it to Promulgation of the Fall.
Nice.
So that was definitely like the more metal side. And then
we got one more.
Lastly, I'm going to just throw a wild card out there for this one. Cause it's like, I can't not plug the fact that Mobb Deep, The Infamous, is like one of my favorite albums of all time.
Hell yeah.
It's just, they were kids. It's real. It's like, it's the streets. It's like the true struggle of what it's like to be a kid, let alone a kid in a fucking crime infested, just basically no future, no hope. You're destined to either be dead or go to jail.
Yeah.
And it's just so honest. Like, it's such an honest record. And again, they didn't care. They were like 19 or whatever and saying like, we don't care. You're a snitch. You're a punk and we don't care. And we're going to keep doing us. So yeah, I think being a punk kid and hearing like the, you know, just kind of like coming from a punk background, hearing the similarities of hip hop to punk music are so like, they're just there. Like you can't deny the fact that, like, I'm not saying like Little John is the next Crass, but I'm saying like, there's bands that, you know, like Mobb Deep and Nas, Bone Thugs, things like that, Dr. Dre even, you know, things like that are coming from the West Coast. It's like, that stuff all has a social message to it. It has some sort of struggle with it. It may not be about demons. It may not be about, you know, corpses rising from the grave and f***ing your girlfriend. But it's like, it's something a little more
Gravediggers is
tangible that you... Yeah. So, yeah, exactly. And that's a perfect record, by the way. Don't even get me started on that. But it's either The Infamous or I'd give it to 36 Chambers by Wu-Tang.
Nice.
Those two records, just as a kid, I listened to them over and over and over and over. And I still listen to them to this day over and over and over. Actually, I went for a run earlier before we did this call.
Yeah.
And that's all I ran to was The Infamous. And I think that maybe that's why I'm like mentioning it, because it's like, yeah, I had to throw something, a curveball in there that isn't rock or metal or anything else like that. So yeah.
So Neurosis, Iron Maiden, Dead Congregation, and Mobb Deep. Put those together, you get Of Feather and Bone.
At least on my end.
There you go. So again, talking with Alvino.
I know, actually.
Oh, sorry, Alvino Sacedo, just to remind, if in case you're just tuning in, from A Feather and Bone, and I just wanted to ask you one more question, dude. So, actually, happy early birthday in a couple days. You're gonna be turning 36.
Thanks,
so out of these 30, you're welcome. These 36 years, pick a scar on your body and tell us the story of how you got that scar, Alvino.
Oh man, I got the perfect one. There's one on my wrist. It's actually on my right wrist. I'm actually looking at it right now.
Uh-huh.
We were playing a show, playing some show in Reno. It was really not that good of a show. Just kind of whatever. But I had just gotten a new knife that was like had on me. And I was like, this is such a cool knife. I want this knife on me. Like, this is so sweet. I'm so stoked to have it. It's like, obviously factory brand new. So this thing is sharp. It's razor sharp.
Uh-oh.
And I think we're just kind of chilling in the van. Like everyone's kind of like tired, you know, like I don't want to hang out at this venue. Let's just go sit in the van and take some time to ourselves. And I was sitting in the driver's seat and this is like 20 minutes before we have to play. And Dave is like sitting in the passenger side. And this is like 6 years ago at least.
Okay.
And I'm playing with the knife, like opening it, closing it. It's a collapsible. And David goes, he's like, you're going to cut yourself. Stop messing with that. And I go, no, I won't. And at that very moment, I drop the knife, not even hard, kind of guillotine style, right on my wrist. And I go, whoa. And I'm just like, whoa. And Dave's like, see, I told you. And I go, nothing happened. And we both looked at it, and like, it had cut so clean that the vessels hadn't started bleeding yet.
Oh,
so you just saw fat, like a couple, like a layer of fat, and then blood. And Dave's like, I f-ing told you. Yeah, I knew you were going to hurt yourself. I was like, I didn't mean to. It was an accident. And so I was like, we got to, like, what do we do? It's like, we got to play. And he was like, what are you going to do? I was like, oh, just give me the toilet paper in the back and get some tape. And I was like, looking for duct tape. I was like, we don't have any duct tape. And I was like, get the masking tape for the merch. So yeah. I'm masking, like, our friend who was with us, she puts masking tape and like toilet paper on it.
Uh-huh.
And I go, cool. That'll hold until we're done. And I'll get some super glue. And so we play the whole set, and the whole time I just remember looking down at my, and it's like, you know, my pick hand. So I'm strumming with that hand. And I look down and just my whole hand is covered in blood. I see people looking at me because I don't wear my glasses when I'm just blind as a bat.
Yeah.
And I can see people's faces kind of just looking at me like going, what the hell is happening right now? Why is he bleeding? And so, yeah, that's that scar, and it's still there, and it never went away. You know, and like I said, after the show, we went to Walgreens. And I picked up some super glue and, like, I think some just, like, better bandages. And we got to this kid's house we were staying that night. And, yeah, I just kind of held it together. My friend, she super glued it, and we taped it up. And that was it. And that was history. And, like, you know, it's actually a pretty straight line. Not too bad of a scar. So
not bad.
But, yeah, that's – there's that one. So, yeah, that was it was a tour story with a scar story. So, yeah.
Dang it. Awesome, man. Well, I'm going to let you go. I know it's around almost 10 where you are, and you are a hero. You're an essential worker. You ever been called a hero before?
Oh, man. Not for the capitalist state, but I guess so this time, so I'll take it.
Right on, man. Well, do you have any final words for anyone that might be kind of going through it right now, stuck at home, maybe a little down?
Oh, man, support bands, listen, like, support art, listen to it, watch it, break out of your norm and yep. Read a book you haven't read or something that you kind of held off checking out because of whatever excuse of, like, I don't have time for it. Just listen to something you've never thought you'd listen to.
Now you got
and
the time.
And maybe you find some direction. You have time now. You maybe find some direction with it. Who knows? Music is powerful. Movies are powerful. Books are powerful. Art is just powerful.
Yep.
So support bands while you can right now. Support anybody who needs it and... yeah, stay strong. So that's what I got.
And pick up the Of Feather and Bone record, Bestial Hymns of Perversion. Alvino Salcedo from Of Feather and Bone. Thanks so much, man.
Thanks, man. Appreciate it. Thank you so much. Have a good night.
This has been Metal Shop's Backstage Pass.
What kind of programs does this school have? How are the test scores? How many kids do a classroom? Homes.com knows these are all things you ask when you're home shopping as a parent. That's why each listing on Homes.com includes extensive reports on local schools, including photos, parent reviews, test scores, student-teacher ratio, school rankings, and more. The information is from multiple trusted sources and curated by Homes.com's dedicated in-house research team. It's all so you can make the right decision for your family. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average, and auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
Escape the heat to True North Convenience Stores and get any size True Oasis Fountain Drink for 89 cents with True Rewards. Cool that thirst with any of your favorite Pepsi Fountain Drinks for 89 cents. As a free True Rewards member, pick the perfect size for you. No matter if you're craving a big drink or a small sip, it's just 89 cents. Don't have the True Rewards mobile app? Find it in the Apple or Google Play Store to download and save instantly. True North Convenience Stores. Fast, friendly, clean.
With over 25 years of expertise, DAF Giving 360's donor advised funds can help you get a tax deduction and potentially grow your charitable dollars tax-free while you recommend when and where to give. Learn more at DAFGiving360.org.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. Indeed's sponsored jobs help you stand out and hire fast. With sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. And it makes a huge difference. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Plus, with Indeed sponsored jobs, there are no monthly subscriptions, no long-term contracts, and you only pay for results. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/listen. Just go to Indeed.com/listen right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/listen. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.